Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
And I'm Ayan Bior, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, January 12, 2016. Fire at a POC camp leaves thousands of IDPs temporarily homeless.
However, the fire was eventually brought under control, and many of the displaced were able to be accommodated overnight by relatives.
And residents of newly created states from former Western Equatoria welcome the new governors and expect them to usher in peace.
Today I am so happy that new governor is brought to us in Wau, and we hope he will work for peace, stability and security, which will improve our situation so that the citizens live happy, because we have been living in fear.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
Deadly clashes occurred on Friday between cattle keepers from Junglai State's Bor County and local farmers in Jubek State's Lobonuk Payam near the home of Vice President James Wani Iga. Authorities say the cause of the fighting is not known. Police and army forces have been dispatched to the area. The governor of Jubek State met his Junglai counterpart yesterday, and both have agreed to send the pastoralists back to their villages in Bor. Philip Thon Oleu has more for VOA from Juba.
John Lodutombe, a lawmaker representing Lobonuk Payam in the former Central Equatorial State Parliament, says five people were killed in clashes that erupted late last week. Junglai State Governor Philip Aguer says he and his Jubek counterpart have asked the Ministry of Defense to send soldiers to Lobonuk to escort the pastoralists back to their villages in Bor. Aguer says the return of cattle keepers from Jubek State to Junglai State will begin immediately. He says their return will be monitored by authorities in accordance with orders of the president that all cattle keepers should leave Equatorial Region and return to their states. Aguer says the cattle keepers, who are mainly from the Dinga Bor community, have agreed to return to their home in Junglai State. Agustino Jadala, the governor of Jubek State, says another committee composed of Bari tribal elders will meet farmers to ask them to allow the pastoralists safe passage as they return to their villages. Jadala says the committee made up of people from Bor will meet the cattle keepers from Bor, and the committee from Bari will meet the youths in Lobonuk so there is no more fighting. He says they are doing this because they are implementing the peace agreement. Jadala says the peace agreement the government signed with the SPLM in opposition in August must translate to tranquility nationwide. He says Jubek and Junglai states will remain good neighbors, and officials will work to prevent hostilities between farmers and pastoralists. Jadala says, our daughters are married to Bor, and we married their daughters. We have blood relations, and these relations will not be separated by anyone except God, who created us. For this reason, he says, they do not want to see these clashes to be seen as tribal conflict like what happened in 2008. Jadala says, the two states have to show leadership and control the clashes from spreading to other areas in Lobonuk. Cattle keepers from Junglai State's Bor moved to Greater Equatoria Region in 2012 to escape cattle raiding and animal diseases in Junglai State. But relations between the farmers and pastoralists have remained tense, often resulting in deadly clashes. President Salva Kiir ordered all cattle keepers from Barhagazar Region and Junglai State to leave Equatoria Region last year. For VOA News, I'm Philip Thon Oleu in Juba.
12 people are recovering in hospitals today after a hand grenade accidentally detonated on Saturday in a pickup truck outside the UN Protection of Civilians site in Malakal. The UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says the explosion killed 3 soldiers and 3 civilians and wounded 12 others. The injured were rushed to the UNMISS Level 2 clinic in the compound, as well as to the MSF hospital nearby in Malakal. The explosion occurred about 200 meters from the POC site late Saturday morning in a truck carrying SPLA soldiers and civilians who were traveling to Baluch. Separately, a fire on Sunday destroyed a number of shelters in Sector 1 of the POC site in Malakal. It's unclear if the fire was an accident or was started intentionally. Chantal Persuade, acting spokesperson for UNMISS in Juba, says the fire left an estimated 1,000 IDPs homeless.
However, the fire was eventually brought under control, and many of the displaced were able to be accommodated overnight by relatives. Also, non-food items were distributed to the victim.
The fire and grenade accident only add to the problems already at the POC site, which is severely overcrowded. More than 25,000 people are living at the site. Each person has just 7 square meters of living space, which is far below international humanitarian standards of 30 square meters per person. Persuad said a baby died during the fire. She says at least 8 people suffered minor injuries resulting from smoke inhalation. UNMISS says the cause of the fire remains under investigation.
Residents of Budwe, Maridi, and Amadi states say they expect peace and stability to return to the area now that their governors have arrived. Fighting erupted last year between local vigilantes and SPLA forces in all 3 states, which were carved out of former Western Equatoria state. Hundreds of residents gathered at the Yambio airstrip to welcome their new governors as they arrived yesterday from Juba. Gift Friday accompanied the governors and has this report for VOA from Juba.
Residents sang and danced at Yambio airstrip as they welcomed Governors Patrick Raphael Zomoi of Budwe State and Joseph Ngere Pasiko of Amadi State. Some were disappointed that the Maridi State Governor Africano Mande did not travel to Yambio with his colleagues. The Bishop of Yambio Diocese of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan, Peter Munde, who greeted the governors at Yambio airstrip, said their arrival was a sign that peace is slowly returning to the country.
Peace has come already. Let everybody impress peace. Both young and old and women must impress peace. All of us must work collectively to support this peace. Nobody should work for war again. Nobody should not to support war. We are fed up with war. I want people to do nowadays is forgiveness. Forgive each other. If somebody done wrong to you, please forgive the person.
Titi Anthony, a native of the area now called Amadi State, says he will work with his new governor in developing the state. But he says unless the governor improves security, the new state will not develop.
The first thing the governor has to do is to calm the situation in Greater Mundri. We say the Amadi State. I think if we deal with the security problem, the development will be faster.
Budwe State resident Francois Simon agrees.
My expectation for the 3 governors of Greater Western Equatoria is that we need peace, then we need security, because our state has been going through many problems, war, but we already signed the peace agreement.
The chairperson of the Women's Union in the former Western Equatoria state, Christine Mbazande, called on the governors to protect the rights of women and children.
Security of women and children are at risk due to the internal issues from our own children and our own husbands. Just to mention, some women and girls are being raped to death, more especially the pregnant women, breastfeeding mothers, and worse are the respected women in the churches.
Mbazande urged the governors to appoint more women to positions in the state government. Speaking to reporters at the Yambio airstrip, Governor Joseph Ngere Pasiko of Amadi State says their arrival together signifies the unity as people of former Western Equatoria State.
Without peace, there is nothing. Without reconciliation, we will not go ahead. So this is our priority. You are well aware that the whole Western of Equatoria has been engulfed by some conflicts around. We try to solve that so that we open the roads. There is relief to the people who are displaced and the children go back to school.
Budwe State Governor Patrick Raphael Zomoi says he could not agree more.
The most important thing is we must bring peace to the people at all costs. Without peace, we can't do anything. After we achieve sustainable peace to the people of Budwe State, from there, now the second immediate program will be road infrastructure. So that if we want to bring school materials, building materials, sell our produce out, the road must be there.
Governor Zumwe called on people of former Western Equatoria to stay united and to shun tribalism. For VON News, I'm Gift Friday, reporting from Juba.
WAU State Governor Elias Waya Anyapuch says he is determined to improve security in his area as well. He says he will speak to armed groups fighting the government in WAU. Residents who turned out by the hundreds to greet their new governor today say they expect Anyapuch to stop arbitrary arrest, something they say has become all too common in the area. Dimo Silva Arello has more for VOA from WAU.
Hundreds of residents sang traditional songs as they welcomed Governor Elias Waya Anyapuch in WAU this morning. Waya, who hails from the Luo community of Jiu River County, says he will work to repair the image of the SPLM in the state and asks residents not to blame him for the mistakes of his predecessors. He told residents, if there is anything bad that they have done, it should be blamed on them individually, not on the SPLM as a party. He added, if I make a mistake, then I will be held accountable. Waya says he will do everything in his powers to end corruption in the state. He also says he will end tribalism in the state. Waya says nobody will direct him in governing the state, and anything planned for the good of the state will be in line with the national objectives and will be for the benefit of the people. He promised not to cheat residents or violate the law. Mark Nyipoch, former governor of the former Western Baal Gazal estate, who accompanied the new governor, says people in WAU are yearning for peace. Nyipoch told residents, I used to say, give the people a chance to have peace and let them be free. He said, this is the peace you have got now. Residents Laura Camilo says she expects the new leader not to allow criminal activity to go unpunished as it has in the past.
My message to this new government is that it should see the bad things we have gone through, like killing and looting at night, should all stop.
Citizen Andrew Anthony says she hopes the new governor will work for the interests of all residents.
Today I am so happy that new governor is brought to us in WAU, and we hope he will work for peace, stability and security, which will improve our situation so that the citizens live happy, because we have been living in fear. Citizens want service like water, roads, electricity, and nothing more than that.
But for the youth like Bullis Hassan, ending arbitrary arrest should be one of the priorities of the new governor. He says, my expectation from the new governor is to give us security. This arbitrary arrest we were going through should stop. Hassan also said area roads should be repaired and high prices in the market reduced. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WAU.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A new report says conflict in places like South Sudan not only ruins children's ability to go to school, but jeopardizes their future. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Are you doing the job that you imagined when you were a child?
When I was a child, I wanted to become a lawyer. But after doing my A-level, I did not make it for that job. So I went for something else, that is teaching. So right now I'm a teacher, but I enjoy it.
Yes, I'll say yes, because I've always had the passion of developing my society, of making impact. And you can make impact from various parts. Though I thought I was going to be more relevant in the headline, maybe a medical doctor or so, but I'm still making impact in my society as a civil society person.
No, I read accountancy, and my MBA is banking, so I now find myself an NGO person. I'm not doing what I have in mind when I was young.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we're talking about a disease often misdiagnosed as pneumonia. The difficult-to-diagnose, little-known deadly bacterial disease is more widespread than previously thought and likely present in 79 countries, including 34 that have never reported it. VOA correspondent Steve Herman in our Southeast Asia Bureau in Bangkok has details.
The disease is called melioidosis and is caused by bacteria in soil and water, most commonly in Asia. It is contracted through the skin, lungs, or by drinking infected water. Patients are frequently diagnosed as having pneumonia or suffering from sepsis, a potentially life-threatening complication of an infection. Dr. Derek Limatorasakul studies the disease at the Mahidol Oxford Tropical Medicine Research Unit.
Doctors will try to rule out whether they have malaria or dengue infection by rapid diagnostic test. But if they are not malaria, if they are not dengue, doctors will suspect that any bacterial infection is a cause of the pneumonia and sepsis. In many developing countries where they don't have the bacterial culture facilities, they will just give antibiotics to patients.
But these bacteria are resistant to a wide range of antimicrobials, and treatment with ineffective antimicrobials can result in fatality rates exceeding 70%. A new study estimates the disease kills nearly as many people as measles, and more deaths are caused by it annually than from dengue or leptospirosis, both of which are current health priorities for numerous international health organizations. The number of cases is expected to rise amid the increase in diabetes in the tropics, especially among the poor, and among international travelers, which increases the risk of the pathogen being introduced to new areas. Besides diabetics, those with chronic kidney disease are also considered to be at a higher risk to contract melioidosis.
It can survive well within your white blood cells or macrophage. This bacteria will spread much faster and can kill you easier if you've got those kind of the disease.
People who excessively drink alcohol are also at higher risk for the same reason. The study predicts high infection rates throughout Southeast Asia, notably in Vietnam and India, where there is especially low awareness about it among medical practitioners. The tropical zones of Australia are also considered melioidosis high-risk zones, as well as East Asia and the Pacific, Sub-Saharan Africa, and South America. Some areas in Central America, Southern Africa, and the Middle East are also at risk, according to researchers. The study recommends health workers, international organizations, and policymakers give melioidosis a higher priority. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
A new report says there are nearly 24 million children around the world unable to attend school because of conflict, including children in South Sudan. UNICEF, the UN's Children's Fund, says that puts their future and their country's future at risk. VOA's Joe DiCapua has more.
UNICEF studied 22 countries affected by conflict. Education and emergency specialist Lisa Bender gives an overview of what was found.
I think the headline message is that we're seeing more and more children affected by conflict and the impact of that conflict lasting longer. Children are out of school longer, more children are out of school, they're facing more difficulties when they're in school because of conflict, and we're really worried about this trend.
The findings show that nearly one in four of the more than 109 million kids of primary and lower secondary school age who live in conflict zones are missing out on their education.
We're primarily talking about the key ages between 6 and 15. So this doesn't even count children who are missing early learning opportunities. We're really talking about primary school through lower secondary school, the key years for learning.
Bender says at the top of the UNICEF list of countries where conflict is disrupting education is Africa's newest nation.
The country with the highest proportion of out-of-school children is South Sudan. Over half of their children are out of school. Niger is a close second with 47% of their children unable to attend school, followed by Sudan at 41%. And though Afghanistan has made significant progress, they still have 40% of their children out of school.
As for Syria, the country driving Europe's migrant and refugee crisis, Bender says it once had most of its kids in school.
We've seen many children in Syria who are now not able to attend school because of the conflict, but there's been such a huge population movement, as you know, into the surrounding countries and now the European migrant crisis, that it's hard to say exactly how many of those children are accessing learning opportunities, if they're formal or non-formal. We're doing our best to provide services with many partners for those children, but it's very hard to get a specific number.
UNICEF's analysis says a lack of education puts children's future at risk.
We mean that they won't have the skills that they need to access the job market. They won't have the basic skills that they need to negotiate life. In the countries where we have seen children access education in small villages in Afghanistan, for example, where I visited, these children play a crucial role in negotiating contracts for their parents, being able to understand how to get good prices at the local market. So we're talking about daily living skills as well as the long-term skills they need to become the future teachers and doctors and leaders of their countries.
If a generation of children grows up without these skills, Bender says countries suffer in the long term. For example, economies and health could decline, while girls become more vulnerable to sex abuse. Conflicts have also taken a toll on school buildings.
We see many schools that are destroyed or unsafe to use. There are unexploded ordnances. There are soldiers or armed groups who are occupying schools or creating a chilling effect by engaging in activity near schools. So even those children who are in school are facing significant increased risk to their safety and well-being.
UNICEF and its partners are calling on donors and governments to make education a major part of humanitarian efforts in conflict zones.
We need to shift our attitude from saying we'll get back to school when things calm down to saying that we can't afford to let education stop.
To do that, UNICEF reports it's working to create safe environments where children can learn and play to restore normalcy to their lives. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Ugandan government official says a report released today by Human Rights Watch accusing the government of intimidating the local media ahead of February's presidential election is nothing but propaganda. Retired Major General Jim Muwezi, Minister of Information and National Guidance, says freedom of speech is the strength of Uganda's ruling National Resistance Movement. The report says journalists have been suspended under government pressure and radio stations are threatened for hosting opposition members as guests. Muwezi tells VOA's James Buddy the report could lead to official complaints.
There is a freedom of speech in Uganda, and it is the strength of the NRM government. We've got over 268 private radio stations. How can we control all of them? There is no intimidation. There is freedom of speech. There is freedom of the media in Uganda without any threat from the government.
Mr. Minister, there's a quote here by one of the authors of the report from Human Rights Watch. It said journalists have been suspended under government pressure and radio stations threatened for hosting opposition members as guests or when panelists express views critical of the ruling party.
I am not aware of any incident of that nature. Does the reporter give any evidence? Does he mention any name of any journalist that has been threatened or any radio station that has been closed or threatened?
Mr. Minister, with all due respect, the Honorable Mbabazi, a presidential candidate, just about a week or two ago said that a radio station where he was supposed to appear on a talk show, he was denied that privilege. And that station was closed down.
No. Which station? Did he mention it? Honorable Mbabazi owns a radio station which I can tune in any time now, and it is talking ear of government all the time, and it's running and open. It's not closed. His own station, which does not talk anything good about government. It's running here.
So there's no media self-censorship in Uganda because of the actions of your government?
Absolutely not. It is definitely propaganda which should be dismissed with the contempt it deserves.
It says here that freedom of expression and association are also under threat in your country.
Absolutely not. That is very, very wrong. There is freedom in Uganda, and it is one of the strengths of our government.
Where, Mr. Minister, you think that this is coming? Because according to the report, 170 people were interviewed, Ugandans.
Mm. Well, I think this is just malicious. It's because they see the way the elections are going. Our presidential candidate is pulling massive rallies and so on. I suspect that they are beginning to prepare the ground for their complaints.
Retired Major General Jim Muezi is Uganda's Minister of Information. He was speaking with VOA's James Buddy from the capital, Kampala.
Here is a recap of today's top stories. Deadly clashes occurred on Friday between cattle keepers from Jungle Estates, Boer County, and local farmers in Jubek State's Lobanuk Payam, near the home of Vice President James Wani Iga. Authorities say the cause of the fighting isn't known. Police and army forces have been dispatched to the area. The governor of Jubek State met his Jungle A counterpart yesterday, and both agreed to send the pastoralists back to their villages in Boer. A lawmaker representing Lobanuk Payam says five people were killed in those clashes. 12 people are recovering in hospitals today after a hand grenade accidentally detonated on Saturday in a pickup truck outside the UN POC site in Malakal. The UN mission in South Sudan says the explosion killed 3 soldiers and 3 civilians and wounded 12 others. The injured were rushed to the UNMISS clinic and the MSF hospital nearby. Separately, a fire on Sunday destroyed a number of shelters at the POC site. It's unclear if the fire was an accident or was started intentionally. And finally, residents of Budwe, Maridi, and Amadi states say they expect peace and stability to return to the area now that their governors have arrived. Fighting erupted last year between local vigilantes and SPLA forces in all 3 states. And that's a look at some of today's top stories.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Mundongo by Palaso and Sheba.
Monster. Well, it's Palaso and Sheba. Yeah. Palaso, yeah, Palaso, yeah.
We've been listening to Palazzo and Sheba with the song Mundongo. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
And I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.